the slaughter at the Tuscan camp, you shared with me. I was there when you executed Count Dooku, and I know where you got the power to defeat him. You see? You have never needed to pretend with me the way you must with your Jedi comrades. Do you understand that you need never hide anything from me? That I accept you exactly as you are? He spread his hands as though offering a hug. Share with me the truth. Your absolute truth. Let yourself out, Anakin. Anakin shook his head. How many times had he dreamed of not having to pretend to be the perfect Jedi? But what else could he be? I wouldn't even know how to begin. It's quite simple in the end. Tell me what you want. Anakin squinted up at him. I don't understand. Of course you don't. The last of the sunset haloed his ice-white hair and threw his face into shadow. You've been trained to never think about that. The Jedi never ask what you want. They simply tell you what you're supposed to want. They never give you a choice at all. That's why they take their students, their victims, at an age so young that choice is meaningless. By the time a Padawan is old enough to choose, he has been so indoctrinated, so brainwashed, that he is incapable of even considering the question. But you're different, Anakin. You had a real life outside the Jedi Temple. You can break through the fog of lies the Jedi have pumped into your brain. I ask you again, what do you want? I still don't understand. I am offering you anything, Palpatine said. Ask, and it is yours. A glass of water, it's yours. A bag full of Karuska gems, yours. Look out the window behind me, Anakin. Pick something. And it's yours.
Is this some kind of joke?
The time for jokes is past, Anakin. I have never been more serious.
Within the shadow that cloaked Palpatine's face, Anakin could only just see the twin gleams of the Chancellor's eyes.
Pick something. Anything.
All right. Shrugging, frowning, still not understanding, Anakin looked out the window, looking for the most ridiculously expensive thing he could spot. How about one of those new Sorrow sub-custom speeders?
Done.
Are you serious? You know how much one of those costs? You could practically outfit a battle cruiser.
Would you prefer a battle cruiser?
Anakin went still. A cold void opened in his chest. In a small, cautious voice, he said, How about the senatorial apartments?
A private apartment?
Anakin shook his head, staring up at the twin gleams in the darkness on Palpatine's face. The whole building. Palpatine did not so much as blink.
Done.
It's privately owned. Not anymore. You can't just...
Yes, I can. It's yours. Is there anything else? Name it.
Anakin gazed blankly out into the gathering darkness. Stars began to shimmer through the haze of twilight. A constellation he recognized hung above the spires of the Jedi Temple.
All right, Anakin said softly. Corellia. I'll take Corellia.
The planet or the whole system?
Anakin stared.
Anakin?
He shook his head blankly. I can't figure out if you're kidding or completely insane.
I am neither, Anakin. I am trying to impress upon you a fundamental truth of our relationship. A fundamental truth of yourself.
What if I really wanted the Corellian system? The whole Five Brothers, all of it?
Then it would be yours. You can have the whole sector if you like.
The twin gleams within the shadow sharpened.
Do you understand now? I will give you anything you want.
The concept left him dizzy. What if I wanted? What if I went along with Padme and her friends? What if I want the war to end?
Would tomorrow be too soon?
How? Anakin couldn't seem to get his breath. How can you do that?
Right now, we are only discussing what. How is a different issue. We'll come to that presently.
Anakin sank deeper into the chair while he let everything sink deeper into his brain. If only his head would stop spinning. Why did Palpatine have to start all this now? This would all be easier to comprehend if the nightmares of Padme didn't keep screaming inside his head. And in exchange, he asked finally, what do I have to do?
You have to do what you want.
What I want? Yes, Anakin. Yes, exactly that. Only that.
Do the one thing that the Jedi fear most. Make up your own mind. Follow your own conscience. Do what you think is right. I know that you have been longing for a life greater than that of an ordinary Jedi. Commit to that life. I know you burn for greater power than any Jedi can wield. Give yourself permission to gain that power and allow yourself license to use it. You have dreamed of leaving the Jedi Order, having a family of your own. One that is based on love, not on enforced rules of self-denial.
I can't just leave.
But you can.
Anakin couldn't breathe. He couldn't blink. He sat frozen. Even thought was impossible.
You can have every one of your dreams. Turn aside from the lies of the Jedi and follow the truth of yourself. Leave them. Join me on the path of true power. Be my friend, Anakin. Be my student. My apprentice.
Anakin's vision tunneled again, but this time there was no light at the far end. He pulled back his hand, and it was shaking as he brought it up to support his face. I'm sorry, he said. I'm sorry, but as much as I want those things, as much as I care for you, sir, I can't. I just can't. Not yet. Because there's only one thing I really want right now. Everything else will just have to wait.
I know what you truly want, the shadow said. I have only been waiting for you to admit it to yourself.
A hand, a human hand, warm with compassion, settled onto his shoulder.
Listen to me. I can help you save her.
You? Anakin blinked blindly. How can you help?
Do you remember that myth I told you of? The tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise,
the shadow whispered. The myth
directly influenced the midichlorians to create life. With such knowledge, to maintain life in someone already living would seem a small matter.
Yes, Anakin said. Yes, I remember. The shadow leaned so close that it seemed to fill the world.
Anakin, it's no mere myth.
Anakin swallowed.
Darth Plagueis was real.
Anakin could force out only a strangled whisper. Real?
Darth Plagueis was my master. He taught me the key to his power, the shadow said, dryly matter of fact, before I killed him.
Without understanding how he had moved, without even intending to move, without any transition of realization or dawning understanding, Anakin found himself on his feet. A blue bar of sizzling energy terminated a centimeter from Palpatine's chin, its glow casting red-edged shadows up his face and across the ceiling. Only gradually did Anakin come to understand that this was his lightsaber, and that it was in his hand.
You, he said.
Suddenly, he was neither dizzy nor tired. Suddenly, everything made sense.
It's you. It's been you all along.
In the clean blue light of his blade, he stared into the face of a man whose features were as familiar to him as his own, but now seemed as alien as an extragalactic comet. Because now, he finally understood that those familiar features were only a mask. He had never seen this man's real face.
I should kill you, he said. I will kill you.
Palpatine gave him that wise, kindly uncle smile Anakin had been seeing since the age of 9.
For what?
You're a Sith Lord.
I am, he said simply. I am also your friend. The blue bar of energy wavered, just a bit. I am also the man who has always been here for you. I am the man you have never needed to lie to. I am the man who wants nothing from you but that you follow your conscience. If that conscience requires you to commit murder, simply over a philosophical difference, I will not resist. His hands opened, still at his sides. Anakin, when I told you that you can have anything you want, did you think I was excluding my life? The floor seemed to soften beneath Anakin's feet, and the room started to swirl darkness and ooze confusion.
You
won't even fight?
Fight you? In the blue glow that cast shadows up from Palpatine's chin, the Chancellor looked astonished that he would suggest such a thing. But what will happen when you kill me? What will happen to the Republic? His tone was gently reasonable. What will happen to Padme?
Padme.
Her name was a gasp of anguish. When I die, Palpatine said, with the air of a man reminding a child of something he ought to already know. My knowledge dies with me. The sizzling blade trembled. Unless, that is, I have the opportunity to teach it to my apprentice. His vision swam. A whisper of naked pain and despair.
I don't know what to do.
Palpatine gazed upon him, loving and gentle as he had ever been, though only a whisker shy of a lightsaber's terminal curve. And what if this face was not a mask? What if the true face of the Sith was exactly what he saw before him? A man who had cared for him, had helped him, had been his loyal friend when he'd thought he had no other. What then? Anakin, Palpatine said kindly, let's talk. The four bodyguard droids spread out in a shallow arc between Obi-Wan and Grievous, raising their electro-staffs. Obi-Wan stopped a respectful distance away. He still carried bruises from one of those electro-staffs, and he felt no particular urge to add to his collection. General Grievous, he said, you're under arrest. The bio-droid general stalked toward him, passing through his screen of bodyguards without the slightest hint of reluctance.
Kenobi, don't tell me. Let me guess. This is the part where you give me the chance to surrender.
It can be, Obi-Wan allowed equably. Or, if you like, it can be the part where I dismantle your exoskeleton and ship you back to Coruscant in a cargo hopper.
I'll take option 3.
Grievous lifted his hand, and the bodyguards moved to box Obi-Wan between them.
That's the one where I watch you die.
Another gesture, and the droids in the ceiling hive came to life. They uncoiled from their sockets, heads downward, with a rising chorus of whirring and buzzing and clicking that thickened until Obi-Wan might as well have stumbled into a colony of Corellian raptor wasps. They began to drop free of the ceiling, first only a few, then many, like the opening drops of a summer cloudburst. Finally, they fell in a downpour that shook the stone-mounted durasteel of the deck and left Obi-Wan's ears ringing. Hundreds of them landed and rolled to standing, as many more stayed attached to the overhead hive, hanging upside down by their magnapeds, weapons trained so that Obi-Wan now stood at the focus of a dome of blasters. Through it all, Obi-Wan never moved. I'm sorry, was I not clear? He said. There is no option 3. Grievous shook his head.
Do you never tire of this pathetic banter?
I rarely tire at all, Obi-Wan said mildly. And I have no better way to pass the time while I wait for you to either decide to surrender or choose to die.
That choice was made long before I ever met you.
Grievous turned away.
Kill him.
Instantly, the box of bodyguards around Obi-Wan filled with crackling electro-staffs, whipping faster than the human eye could see, which was less troublesome than it might have been, for that box was already empty of Jedi. The Force had let him collapse as though he'd suddenly fainted. Then it brought his lightsaber from his belt to his hand and ignited it while he turned his fall into a roll. That roll carried his lightsaber through a crisp arc that severed the leg of one of the bodyguards. And as the Force brought Obi-Wan back to his feet, the Force also nudged the crippled bodyguard to topple sideways into the path of the blade and sent it clanging to the floor in two smoking, sparking pieces. One down. The remaining three pressed the attack, but more cautiously. Their weapons were longer than his, and they struck from beyond the reach of his blade. He gave way before them, his defensive velocities barely keeping their crackling discharge blades at bay. Three Magna Guards, each with a double-ended weapon that generated an energy field impervious to lightsabers. Each with reflexes that operated near light speed. Each with hyper-sophisticated, heuristic combat algorithms that enabled it to learn from experience and adapt its tactics instantly to any situation, were certainly beyond Obi-Wan's ability to defeat. But it was not Obi-Wan who would defeat them. Obi-Wan wasn't even fighting. He was only a vessel emptied of self. The Force, shaped by his skill and guided by his clarity of mind, fought through him. In the Force, he felt their destruction. It was somewhere above and behind him, and only seconds away. He went to meet it with a backflipping leap that the Force used to lift him neatly to an empty droid socket in the ceiling hive. The Magna Guard sprang after him, but he was gone by the time they arrived, leaping higher into the maze of girders and cables and room-sized cargo containers that was the control center's superstructure. Here, said the Force within him. And Obi-Wan stopped, balancing on a girder, frowning back at the oncoming killer droids that leapt from beam to beam below him like malevolent Durasteel primates. Though he could feel its close approach, he had no idea from where the destruction might come until the Force showed him a support beam within reach of his blade and whispered, "Now." His blade flicked out, and the Durasteel beam parted, fresh-cut edges glowing white-hot, and a great hulk of ship-sized cargo container that the beam had been supporting tore free of its other supports with shrieks of anguished metal and crashed down upon all three Magna Guards with the finality of a meteor strike. 2, 3, and 4. Oh, thought Obi-Wan, with detached approval. That worked out rather well. Only 10,000 to go, give or take. An instant later, the Force had him hurtling through a storm of blaster fire as every combat droid in the control center opened up on him at once. Letting go of intention, letting go of desire, letting go of life, Obi-Wan fixed his entire attention on a thread of the Force that pulled him toward Grievous. Not where Grievous was, but where Grievous would be when Obi-Wan got there. Leaping girder to girder, slashing cables on which to swing through swarms of ricocheting particle beams, blade flickering so fast it became a deflector shield that splattered blaster bolts in all directions, his presence alone became a weapon. As he spun and whirled through the control center superstructure, the blasts of particle cannons from power droids destroyed equipment and shattered girders and unleashed a torrent of red-hot debris that crashed to the deck, crushing droids on all sides. By the time he flipped down through the air to land cat-footed on the deck once more, nearly half the droids between him and Grievous had been destroyed by their own not-so-friendly fire. He cut his way into the mob of remaining troops as smoothly as if it were no more than a canebrake near some sunlit beach. His steady pace left behind a trail of smoking slices of droid.
Keep firing!
Grievous roared to the spider droids that flanked him.
Blast him!
Obi-Wan felt the massive shoulder cannon of a spider droid track him, and he felt it fire a bolt as powerful as a proton grenade. and he let the force nudge him into a leap that carried him just far enough toward the fringe of the bolt's blast radius so that instead of shattering his bones, it merely gave him a very strong, very hot push that sent him whirling over the rest of the droids to land directly in front of Grievous. A single slash of his lightsaber amputated the shoulder cannon of one power droid and continued into a spinning force-assisted kick that brought his boot heel to the point of the other power droid's duranium chin, snapping the droid's head back hard enough to sever its cervical sensor cables. Blind and deaf, the power droid could only continue to obey its last order. It staggered in a wild circle, its convulsively firing cannon blasting random holes in droids and walls alike, until Obi-Wan deactivated it with a precise thrust that burned a thumb-sized hole through its thoracic brain case. "General," Obi-Wan said, with a blandly polite smile, as though unexpectedly greeting, on the street, someone he privately disliked. "My offer is still open." Droid guns throughout the control center fell silent. Obi-Wan stood so close to Grievous that the general was in the line of fire. Grievous threw back his cloak imperiously.
"Do you believe that I would surrender to you now?"
"I am still willing to take you alive." Obi-Wan's nod took in the smoking, sparking wreckage that filled the control center. So far, no one has been hurt. Grievous tilted his head so that he could squint down into Obi-Wan's face.
"I have thousands of troops. You cannot defeat them all."
"I don't have to."
"This is your chance to surrender, General Kenobi."
Grievous swept a duranium hand toward the sinkhole city behind him.
"Pow City is in my grip. Lay down your blade, or I will squeeze until this entire sinkhole brims over with innocent blood."
"That's not what it's about to brim with," Obi-Wan said. "You should pay more attention to the weather." Yellow eyes narrowed behind the mask of armor plast.
"What?"
"Have a look outside." He pointed his lightsaber toward the archway. "It's about to start raining clones." Grievous said again, turning to look.
"What?"
A shadow had passed over the sun, as though one of the towering thunderheads on the horizon had caught a stray current in the hyperwinds and settled above Pow City. But it wasn't a cloud. It was the Vigilance. While twilight enfolded the sinkhole, over the bright desert, above assault craft, skimmed the dunes in a tightening ring centered on the city. Hailfire droids rolled out from caves in the wind-scoured mesas, unleashing firestorms of missiles toward the oncoming craft for exactly 2.5 seconds apiece, which is how long it took for the Vigilance's sensor operators to transfer data to its turbolaser batteries. Thunderbolts roared down through the atmosphere, and hailfire droids disintegrated. Pinpoint counterfire from the bubble turrets of lat eyes met missiles in blossoming fireballs that were ripped to shreds of smoke as the oncoming craft blasted through them. Lat eyes streaked over the rim of the sinkhole and spiraled downward with all guns blazing, crabbing outward to keep their forward batteries raking on the sinkhole's wall, while at the rim above, Jadthu-class armored landers hovered with bay doors wide, trailing sprays of polyplast cables like immense ice-white tassels that looped all the way to the ocean mouths that gaped at the lowest level of the city. Down those tassels, rappelling so fast they seemed to be simply falling, came endless streams of armored troopers already firing on the combat droids that marched out to meet them. Streamers of cables brushed the outer balcony of the control center, and down them slid white armored troopers, each with one hand on his mechanized line break and the other full of DC-15 blaster rifle on full auto, spraying continuous chains of packeted particle beams. Droids wheeled and dropped and leapt into the air and burst to fragments. Surviving droids opened up on the clones as though grateful for something to shoot at, blasting holes in armor, cooking flesh with superheated steam from deep tissue hits, blowing some troopers entirely off their cables to tumble toward a messy final landing 10 levels below. When the survivors of the first wave of clones hit the deck, the next wave was right behind them. Grievous turned back to Obi-Wan, He lowered his head like an angry bantha, yellow glare fixed on the Jedi Master.
To the death, then.
Obi-Wan sighed. If you insist. The bio-droid general cast back his cloak, revealing the four lightsabers pocketed there. He stepped back, spreading wide his duranium arms.
You will not be the first Jedi I have killed, nor will you be the last.
Obi-Wan's only reply was to subtly shift the angle of his lightsaber up and forward. The general's widespread arms now split along their lengths, dividing in half. Even his hands split in half. Now, he had four arms and four hands, and each hand took a lightsaber as his cloak dropped to the floor. They snarled to life, and Grievous spun all four of them in a flourishing velocity so fast and so seamlessly integrated that he seemed to stand within a pulsing sphere of blue and green energy.
Come on, then, Kenobi. Come for me. I have been trained in your Jedi arts by Lord Tyrannus himself.
Do you mean Count Dooku? What a curious coincidence, Obi-Wan said, with a deceptively pleasant smile. I trained the man who killed him. With a convulsive snarl, Grievous lunged. The sphere of blue lightsaber energy around him bulged toward Obi-Wan and opened like a mouth to bite him in half. Obi-Wan stood his ground, his blade still. Chain-lightning teeth closed upon him. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker right now. You don't remember putting away your lightsaber. You don't remember moving from Palpatine's private office to his larger public one. You don't remember collapsing in the chair where you now sit. Nor do you remember drinking water from the half-empty glass that you find in your mechanical hand. You remember only that the last man in the galaxy you still thought you could trust has been lying to you since the day you met. And you're not even angry about it. Only stunned. After all, Anakin, you are the last man who has a right to be angry at someone for keeping a secret. What else was I to do? Palpatine sits in his familiar tall oval chair behind his familiar desk. The lamp discs are full on, the office eerily bright. Ordinary. As though this is merely another one of your friendly conversations, the casual evening chats you've enjoyed together for so many years. As though nothing has happened. As though nothing has changed. Corruption has made the Republic a cancer in the body of the galaxy. And no one could burn it out. Not the judicials, not the Senate, not even the Jedi Order itself. I was the only man strong and skilled enough for this task. I was the only man who dared even attempt it. Without my small deception, how should I have cured the Republic? Had I revealed myself to you or to anyone else, the Jedi would have hunted me down and murdered me without trial. Very much as you nearly did only a moment ago. You can't argue. Words are beyond you. He rises, moving around his desk, taking one of the small chairs and drawing it close to yours. If only you could know how I have longed to tell you, Anakin. All these years, since the very day we met, my boy, I have watched over you, waiting as you grew in strength and wisdom. Biding my time until now, today, when you are finally ready to understand who you truly are and your true place in the history of the galaxy. Numb words blur from your numb lips. The Chosen One. Exactly, my boy. Exactly. You are the Chosen One. He leans toward you, eyes clear, steady, utterly honest. Chosen by me. He turns a hand toward the panorama of light-sprayed cityscape through the window behind his desk. Look out there, Anakin. A trillion beings on this planet alone. In the galaxy as a whole, uncounted quadrillions. And of them all, I have chosen you, Anakin Skywalker, to be the heir
to my power, to all that I am.
But that's not the prophecy. That's not the prophecy of the Chosen One.
Is this such a problem for you? Is not your quest to find a way to overturn prophecy?
Palpatine leaned close, smiling, warm and kindly.
Anakin, do you think the Sith did not know of this prophecy? Do you think we would simply sleep while it came to pass?
You mean...
This is what you must understand. This Jedi submission to fate. This is not the way of the Sith, Anakin. This is not my way. This is not your way. It has never been. It need never be.
You're drowning. I am not, you hear yourself say, on your side. I am not evil.
Who said anything about evil? I am bringing peace to the galaxy. Is that evil? I am offering you the power to save Padme. Is that evil? Have I attacked you? Drugged you? Are you being tortured?
My boy, I am asking you. I am asking you to do the right thing.
Turn your back on treason, on all those who would harm the Republic. I'm asking you to do exactly what you have sworn to do. Bring peace and justice to the galaxy. And save Padme, of course. Haven't you sworn to protect her, too?
But I...
Words will not fit themselves into the answers you need. If only Obi-Wan were here. Obi-Wan would know what to say, what to do. Obi-Wan could handle this. Right now, you know you can't.
I'll turn you over to the Jedi Council. They'll know what to do.
I'm sure they will. They are already planning to overthrow the Republic. You'll give them exactly the excuse they're looking for. And when they come to execute me, will that be justice? Will they be bringing peace?
They won't. They wouldn't.
Well, of course, I hope you're correct, Anakin. You'll forgive me if I don't share your blind loyalty to your comrades. I suppose it does indeed come down, in the end, to a question of loyalty, he said thoughtfully. That's what you must ask yourself, my boy, whether your loyalty is to the Jedi or to the Republic.
It's not like that.
Palpatine lifted his shoulders. Perhaps not. Perhaps it's simply a question of whether you love Obi-Wan Kenobi more than you love your wife.
There is no more searching for words. There are no longer words at all.
Take your time. Meditate on it. I will still be here when you decide.
Inside your head, there is only fire. Around your heart, the dragon whispers that all things die.
This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker right now.
There is an understated elegance in Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber technique, one that is quite unlike the feel one might get from the other great swords beings of the Jedi Order. He lacks entirely the flash, the pure bold elan of an Anakin Skywalker. There is nowhere in him the penumbral ferocity of a Mace Windu or a Deepa Bilaba, nor the stylish grace of a Shakti or a Dooku. And he is nothing resembling the whirlwind of destruction that Yoda can become. He is simplicity itself. That is his power. Before Obi-Wan had left Coruscant, Mace Windu had told him of facing Grievous in single combat atop a maglev train during the General's daring raid to capture Palpatine. Mace had told him how the computers, slave to Grievous's brain, had apparently analyzed even Mace's unconventionally lethal Vapad, and had been able to respond in kind after a single exchange.
He must have been trained by Count Dooku, Mace had said, so you can expect Makashi as well. Given the number of Jedi he has fought and slain, you must expect that he can attack in any style, or all of them. In fact, Obi-Wan, I believe that of all living Jedi, you have the best chance to defeat him.
This pronouncement had startled Obi-Wan, and he had protested, After all, the only form in which he was truly even proficient was Sarisu, which was the most common lightsaber form in the Jedi Order. Founded upon the basic deflection principles all Padawans were taught, to enable them to protect themselves from blaster bolts, Sarisu was very simple, and so restrained and defense-oriented that it was very nearly downright passive. But surely, Master Windu, Obi-Wan had said, you with the power of Vapad, or Yoda's mastery of Ataro. Mace Windu had almost smiled.
I created Vapad to answer my weakness. It channels my own darkness into a weapon of the light. Master Yoda's Ataro is also an answer to weakness. The limitations of reach and mobility imposed by his stature and his age. But for you, what weakness does Sarisu answer? Blinking, Obi-Wan had been forced to admit he'd never actually thought of it that way. That is so like you, Master Kenobi, the Corrin Master had said, shaking his head. I am called a great swordsman because I invented a lethal style. But who is greater, the creator of a killing form or the master of the classic form? I'm very flattered that you would consider me a master, but really, not a master, the master, Mace had said. Be who you are, and Grievous will never defeat you. So now, facing the tornado of annihilating energy that is Grievous's attack, Obi-Wan simply is who he is. The electro drivers powering Grievous's mechanical arms let each of the four attack thrice in a single second. Integrated by combat algorithms in the BioDroid's electronic network of peripheral processors, each of the 12 strikes per second came from a different angle, with different speed and intensity. An unpredictably broken rhythm of slashes, chops, and stabs, of which every single one could take Obi-Wan's life. Not one touched him. After all, he had often walked unscathed through hornet swarms of blaster fire, defended only by the force's direction of his blade. Countering 12 blows per second was only difficult, not impossible. His blade wove an intricate web of angles and curves, never truly fast, but always just fast enough. Each motion of his lightsaber subtly interfering with 3 or 4 or 8 of the general strikes, the rest sizzling past him, his precise, minimal shifts of weight and stance slipping them by centimeters. Grievous, snarling fury, ramped up the intensity and velocity of his attacks, 16 per second, 18, until finally, at 20 strikes per second, he overloaded Obi-Wan's defense. So Obi-Wan used his defense to attack. A subtle shift in the angle of a single parry brought Obi-Wan's blade in contact not with the blade of the oncoming lightsaber, but with the hand grip. Slice. The blade winked out of existence a hairbreadth before it would have burned through Obi-Wan's forehead. Half the severed lightsaber skittered away, along with the Duranian thumb and first finger of the hand that had held it. Grievous paused, eyes pulsing wide, then drawing narrow. He lifted his maimed hand and stared at the white-hot stumps that held now only half a useless lightsaber. Obi-Wan smiled at him. Grievous lunged. Obi-Wan parried. Pieces of lightsabers bounced on the durasteel deck. Grievous looked down at the blade-sliced hunks of metal that were all he had left in his hands, then up at Obi-Wan's shining, sky-colored blade, then down at his hands again. And then he seemed to suddenly remember that he had an urgent appointment somewhere else. Anywhere else. Obi-Wan stepped toward him, but a shot from the Force made him leap back, just as a scarlet HE bolt struck the floor right where he'd been about to place his foot. Obi-Wan rode the explosion, flipping in the air to land upright between a pair of super battle droids that were busily firing upon the flank of a squad of clone troopers, which they continued to do until they found themselves falling in pieces to the deck. Obi-Wan spun. In the chaos of exploding droids and dying men, Grievous was nowhere to be seen. Obi-Wan waved his lightsaber at the clones. "The General!" he shouted. "Which way?"
One trooper circled his arm as though throwing a proton grenade back toward the archway where Obi-Wan had first entered. He followed the gesture and saw, for an instant in the sun shadow of the vigilance outside, the back curves of twin-bladed rings gang together to make a wheel the size of a starfighter, rolling swiftly off along the sinkhole rim. General Grievous was very good at running away. "Not this time," Obi-Wan muttered, and cut a path through the tangled mob of droids all the way to the arch in a single sustained surge, reaching the open air just in time to see the blade wheeler turn. It was an open ring with a pilot's chair inside, and in the pilot's chair sat Grievous, who lifted one of his bodyguard's electrostaffs in a sardonic wave as he took the scooter straight out over the edge. Four claw-footed arms deployed, digging into the rock to carry him down the side of the sinkhole, angling away at a steep slant. Blast! Obi-Wan looked around. Still no air taxis. Not that he had any real interest in flying through the storm of battle that raged throughout the interior of the sinkhole, but there was certainly no way he could catch Grievous on foot. From around the corner of an interior tunnel, he heard a resonant honk, as though a nearby bantha had swallowed an air horn. He said, "Boga?" The beaked face of the dragon mount slowly extended around the interior angle of the tunnel. "Boga! Come here, girl! We have a general to catch." Boga fixed him with a reproachful glare. "Oh, very well." Obi-Wan rolled his eyes. "I was wrong, you were right. Can we please go now?" The remaining 15 meters of Dragon Mount hove into view and came trotting out to meet him. Obi-Wan sprang to the saddle, and Boga leapt to the sinkhole's rim in a single bound. Her huge head swung low, searching, until Obi-Wan spotted Grievous's blade wheeler racing away toward the landing decks below. "There, girl! That's him! Go!" Boga gathered herself and sprang to the rim of the next level down, poised for an instant to get her bearings, then leapt again down into the firestorm that Pow City had become. Obi-Wan spun his blade in a continuous whirl to either side of the dragon mount's back, disintegrating shrapnel and slapping away stray blaster fire. They plummeted through the sinkhole city, gaining tens of meters on Grievous with every leap. On one of the landing decks, the canopy was lifting and parting to show a small, ultra-fast armored shuttle of the type favored by the famously nervous Nymodian executives of the Trade Federation. Grievous's wheeler sprayed a fan of white-hot sparks as it tore across the landing deck. The biodroid whipped the wheeler sideways, laying it down for a skidding halt that showered the shuttle with molten durasteel. But before he could clamber out of the pilot's chair, several metric tons of Jedi-bearing dragon mount landed on the shuttle's roof, crouched and threatening and hissing venomously down at him. "I hope you have another vehicle, General!" Obi-Wan waved his lightsaber toward the shuttle's twin rear thrusters. "I believe there's some damage to your sublights."
"You're insane! There's no..."
Obi-Wan shrugged. "Show him, Boga." The dragon mount dutifully pointed out the damage with two whistling strikes of her massive tail mace. Wham and wham again, which crumpled the shutter's thruster tubes into crimp-shut knots of metal. Obi-Wan beckoned. "Let's settle this, shall we?" Grievous's answer was a shriek of tortured gyros that wrenched the wheeler upright, and a metal-on-metal scream of blades ripping into deck plates that sent it shooting straight toward the sinkhole wall. And, with the claw arms to help, straight up it. Obi-Wan sighed. "Didn't we just come from there?" Boga coiled herself and sprang for the wall, and the chase was on once more. They raced through the battle, clawing up walls, shooting through tunnels, skidding and leaping, sprinting where the way was clear, and screeching into high-powered serpentines where it was not, whipping around knots of droids and bounding over troopers. Boga ran straight up the side of a clone hover tank and sprang from its turret directly between the high-slanting ring wheels of a hailfire, and a swipe of Obi-Wan's blade left the droid crippled behind them. Native troops had taken the field. Utapauan dragon riders, armed with sparking power lances, charged along causeways, spearing droids on every side. Grievous ran right over anything in his path, the blades of his wheeler shredding droid and trooper and dragon alike. Behind him, Obi-Wan's lightsaber caught and returned blaster bolts in a spray that shattered any droid unwise enough to fire on him. A few stray bolts he batted into the speeding wheeler ahead, but without visible effect. "Fine," he muttered. "Let's try this from a little closer." Boga gained steadily. Grievous's vehicle had the edge in raw speed, but Boga could outturn it and could make instant leaps at astonishing angles. The dragon mount also had an uncanny instinct for where the general might be heading, as well as a seemingly infinite knowledge of useful shortcuts through side tunnels, along sheer walls, and over chasms studded with locked-down wind turbines. Grievous tried once to block Obi-Wan's pursuit by screeching out onto a huge pod that held the whole bank of wind turbines and knocking the blade brakes off them with quick blows of the electrostaff, letting the razor-edged blades spin freely in the constant gale. But Obi-Wan merely brought Boga alongside the turbines and stuck his lightsaber into their whirl. Sliced free chunks of carbo-ceramic blade shrieked through the air and shattered on the stone on all sides, and with a curse, Grievous kicked his vehicle into motion again. The wheeler roared into a tunnel that seemed to lead straight into the rock of the plateau. The tunnel was jammed with ground cars and dragon mounts and wheelers and jetsters and all manner of other vehicles and every kind of beast that might bear or draw the vast number of Utapauans and Utai fleeing the battle. Grievous blasted right into them, blade wheel chewing through ground cars and splashing the tunnel walls with chunks of shredded lizard. Boga raced along the walls above the traffic, sometimes even galloping on the ceiling with claws gouging chunks from the rock. With a burst of sustained effort that strangled her honking to thin gasps of air, Boga finally pulled alongside Grievous. Obi-Wan leaned forward, stretching out with his lightsaber, barely able to reach the wheeler's back curve, and carved away an arc of the wheeler's blade tread, making the vehicle buck and skid. Grievous answered with a thrust of his electrostaff that crackled lightning against Boga's extended neck. The great beast jerked sideways, honking fearfully and whipping her head as though the burn was a biting creature she could shake off her flank. "One more leap, Boga!" Obi-Wan shouted, pressing himself along the dragon mount's shoulder. "Bring me even with him!" The dragon mount complied without hesitation, and when Grievous thrust again, Obi-Wan's free hand flashed out and seized the staff below its discharge blade, holding it clear of Boga's vulnerable flesh. Grievous yanked on the staff, nearly pulling Obi-Wan out of the saddle, then jabbed it back at him, discharge blade sparking in his face. With a sigh, Obi-Wan realized he needed both hands. He dropped his lightsaber. As his deactivated hand grip skittered and bounced along the tunnel behind him, he reflected that it was just as well Anakin wasn't there after all. He'd have never heard the end of it. He got his other hand on the staff just as Grievous jerked the wheeler sideways, half laying it down to angle for a small side tunnel just ahead. Obi-Wan hung on grimly. Through the Force, he could feel Boga's exhaustion, the buildup of anaerobic breakdown products turning the dragon mount's mighty legs to cloth. An open archway showed daylight ahead. Boga barely made the turn, and they raced side by side along the empty, darkened way, joined by the spark-spitting rod of the electrostaff. As they cleared the archway to a small, concealed landing deck deep in a private sinkhole, Obi-Wan leapt from the saddle, yanking on the staff to swing both his boots hard into the side of Grievous's duranium skull. The wheeler's internal gyros screamed at the sudden impact and shift of balance. Their shrieks cycled up to bursts of smoke and fragments of metal as their catastrophic failure sent the wheeler tumbling in a white-hot cascade of sparks. Dropping the staff, Obi-Wan leapt again, the Force lifting him free of the crash. Grievous's electronic reflexes sent him out of the pilot's chair in the opposite direction. The Wheeler flipped over the edge of the landing deck and into the shadowy abyss of the sinkhole. It trailed smoke all the way down to a distant, delayed, and very final crash. The electrostaff had rolled away, coming to rest against the landing jack of a small Techno-Union starfighter that stood on the deck a few meters behind Obi-Wan. Behind Grievous, the archway back into the tunnel system was filled with a panting, exhausted, but still dangerously angry dragon mount. Obi-Wan looked at Grievous. Grievous looked at Obi-Wan. There was no longer any need for words between them. Obi-Wan simply stood, centered in the Force, waiting for Grievous to make his move. A concealed compartment in the general's right thigh sprang open, and a mechanical arm delivered a slim holdout blaster to his hand. He brought it up and fired so fast that his arm blurred to invisibility. Obi-Wan reached. The electrostaff flipped into the air between them, one discharge blade catching the bolt. The impact sent the staff whirling right into Obi-Wan's hand. Then came one instant's pause while they looked into each other's eyes and shared an intimate understanding that their relationship had reached its end. Obi-Wan charged. Grievous backed away, unleashing a stream of blaster bolts as fast as his half a forefinger could pull the trigger. Obi-Wan spun the staff, catching every bolt, not even slowing down. And when he reached Grievous, he slapped the blaster out of his hand with a crack of the staff that sent blue lightning scaling up the general's arm. His following strike was a stiff stab into Grievous's jointed stomach armor that sent the general staggering back. Obi-Wan hit him again in the same place, denting the armorplast plate, cracking the joint where it met the larger, thicker plates of his chest, as Grievous flailed for balance. But when he spun the staff for his next strike, the general's flailing arm flailed itself against the middle of the staff, and his other hand found it as well, and he seized it, yanking himself upright against Obi-Wan's grip, his metal skull face coming within a centimeter of the Jedi Master's nose. He snarled.
Do you think I am foolish enough to arm my bodyguards with weapons that can actually hurt me?
Instead of waiting for an answer, he spun, heaving Obi-Wan right off the deck with effortless strength, whipping him up over his head to slam him to the deck with killing power. Obi-Wan could only let go of the staff and allow the Force to angle his fall into a stumbling roll. Grievous sprang after him, swinging the electrostaff and slamming it across Obi-Wan's flank before the Jedi Master could recover his balance. The impact sent Obi-Wan tumbling sideways, and the electro-burst discharge set his robe on fire. Grievous stayed right with him, attacking before Obi-Wan could even realize exactly what was happening, attacking faster than thought. But Obi-Wan didn't need to think. The Force was with him, and he knew. When Grievous spun the staff overhand, discharge blade sizzling down at Obi-Wan's head for the killing blow, Obi-Wan went to the inside. He met Grievous chest to chest, his upraised hand blocking the general's wrist. Grievous snarled something incoherent and bore down on the Jedi Master's block with all his weight, driving the blade closer and closer to Obi-Wan's face. But Obi-Wan's arm had the Force to give it strength, and the general's arm only had the innate, crystalline intermolecular structure of duranium alloy. Grievous's forearm bent like a cheap spoon. While the general stared in disbelief at his mangled arm, Obi-Wan had been working the fingers of his free hand around the lower edge of Grievous's dented, joint-loose stomach plate. Grievous looked down.
What?
Obi-Wan slammed the elbow of his blocking arm into the general's clavicle while he yanked as hard as he could on the stomach plate, and it ripped free in his hand. Behind it hung a translucent sack of synth skin containing a tangle of green and gray organs. The true body of the alien inside the droid. Grievous howled and dropped the staff to seize Obi-Wan with his three remaining arms. He lifted the Jedi Master over his head again and hurled him tumbling over the landing deck toward the precipice above the gloom-shrouded drop. Reaching into the Force, Obi-Wan was able to connect with the stone itself as if he were anchored to it with a cable tether. Instead of hurtling over the edge, he slammed down onto the rock hard enough to crush all breath from his lungs. Grievous picked up the staff again and charged. Obi-Wan still couldn't breathe. He had no hope of rising to meet the general's attack. All he could do was extend a hand. As the bio-droid loomed over him, electro-staff raised for the kill. The holdout blaster flipped from the deck into Obi-Wan's palm, and with no hesitation, no second thoughts, not even the faintest pause to savor his victory, he pulled the trigger. The bolt ripped into the synth skin sack. Grievous's guts exploded in a foul-smelling shower the color of a dead swamp. Energy chained up his spine, and a mist of vaporized brain burst out both sides of his skull and sent his face spinning off the precipice. The electrostaff hit the deck, followed shortly by the general's knees. Then, by what was left of his head. Obi-Wan lay on his back, staring at the circle of cloudless sky above the sinkhole, while he gasped air back into his spasming lungs. He barely managed to roll over far enough to smother the flames on his robe, then fell back, and simply enjoyed being alive. Much too short a time later, long before he was actually ready to get up, a shadow fell across him, accompanied by the smell of overheated lizard and an admonitory honk. "Yes, Boga. You're right," Obi-Wan agreed reluctantly. Slowly, painfully, he pushed himself to his feet. He picked up the electrostaff and paused for one last glance at the remains of the biodroid general. So, he summoned a condemnation among the most offensive in his vocabulary. Uncivilized. He triggered his comlink and directed Cody to report to Jedi Command on Coruscant that Grievous had been destroyed.
"Will do, General,"
said the tiny holoscan of the clone commander.
"And congratulations. I knew you could do it."
Apparently everyone did, Obi-Wan thought, except Grievous and me.
"General, we do still have a little problem out here. About 10,000 heavily armed little problems, actually."
"On my way. Kenobi out." Obi-Wan sighed and clambered painfully onto the Dragon Mount saddle. "All right, girl," he said. "Let's go win that battle, too." As has been said, the textbook example of a Jedi trap is the one that was set on Utapau for Obi-Wan Kenobi. It worked perfectly. The final element essential to the creation of a truly effective Jedi trap is a certain coldness of mind, a detachment, if you will, from any desire for a particular outcome. The best way to arrange matters is to create a win-win situation. For example, one might use as one's proxy a creature that not only is expendable, but would eventually have to be killed anyway. Thus, if one's proxy fails and is destroyed, it's no loss. In fact, the targeted Jedi has actually done one a favor by taking care of a bit of dirty work one would otherwise have to do oneself. And the final stroke of perfection is to organize the Jedi trap so that by walking into it at all, the Jedi has already lost. That is to say, a Jedi trap works best when one's true goal is merely to make sure that the Jedi in question spend some hours or days off somewhere on the far side of the galaxy, so that he won't be around to interfere with one's real plans. So that by the time he can return, it will be already too late.
Chapter 16. Revelation. Mace Windu stood in the darkened comm center of Jedi Command, facing a life-sized holoscan of Yoda, projected from a concealed Wookiee comm center in the heart of a Roshir tree on Kashyyyk.
"Minutes ago," Mace said,
we received confirmation from Utapau. Kenobi was successful. Grievous is dead.
Time it is to execute our plan.
I will personally deliver the news of Grievous's death. Mace flexed his hands. It will be up to the Chancellor to cede his emergency powers back over to the Senate.
Forget not the existence of Sidious.